Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Thursday, May 11th. And yes, we are not obligated. We are excited. Listen, it's fun to be reacting to the NFL schedule release. That's what we're doing here today. Somehow it has become a thing. I get it. Some people roll their eyes at it. You know, we already know who the opponents are, whatever. But I think there are fun ways to talk about it. You know, like NFL Network's Rich Eisen says, it's the release is not about the what, it's about the when. And now we can sort of visualize like how the season will play out. I always talk about the season as each like individual season is a story. There are chapters for every team. Individual players go through different chapters. Now we can sort of kind of try to predict some of those chapters. And that's pretty much what we're going to do here today. We're going to try to guess when we will know the game or sequence of games where we will know the answers to some of the biggest questions about the 2023 season that we've really been talking about all offseason. I think we're going to continue to talk about in the season. Joining me to do that is the one and only Dalton Del Don. Dalton, the schedule is out, buddy.
What's up, Harmon? Yeah, we got my Warriors, Lakers series, knee deep in baseball, but the NFL is king. So the schedule release takes precedence. It's the spectacle. Let's talk some NFL, man.
Yeah, I just can't let you have a little moment with your Warriors here. I have to, you know, text you about kickers on draft day. I got to bring you in to talk about the damn schedule release. So I'm sorry, Dalton. I can't let you just live this NBA life. I have to get you on the podcast. It is because I like you so much. OK, so remember that. Anyways, a couple of quick one liners, overall impressions about the schedule. Two things stuck out to me. The NFL is clearly buying the Lions hype. They're the opener against the Kansas City Chiefs. Lions and Chiefs. Dalton, I know we are high on the Lions, but I certainly didn't see that one coming of like any team, you know, whether it was even, you know, a division rival for the Chiefs or obviously Super Bowl rematch. That's always fun. It's an interesting one to open the season with Jared Goff. I pointed this out, Dalton, the last time we saw Jared Goff and Patrick Mahomes play, it was that 54-51 absolute like insane Monday night game, Chiefs Rams in 2018. Are the Lions so well set up that they could do something like that on the season opener?
I know we're skeptical of their draft, but the Lions improved their backfield after allowing 32 points over the first seven games last year. They actually allowed just 20.2 over the final 10 games. They're bringing back their offensive coordinator. A lot to be excited about. Even though I just said their defense improved, boy, this will be one of the highest over-unders of the season. It's got to be there on the road against the Chiefs. Certainly will be a fun fantasy game. I don't know if what the spread will be. They'll certainly be underdogs, especially on the road. But yeah, man, it's no longer the underdog Lions. Everyone's going to be on them, as we assumed. You know, they're definitely going to be hyped. But yeah, I mean, the draft, again, a question mark if they did the best, the most valuable positions. But man, there's a lot to like here, for sure.
Yeah, there's a ton to like. And, you know, I know Jared Goff gets a ton of crap all the time. That 2018 Rams team was really awesome. It was really well set up when he put up 54 points. Todd Gurley, pretty big part of that too. 54 points on then Kansas City Chiefs, you know, first year starting Patrick Mahomes. That was a barn burner of a game. I don't know if we're going to get anything like that. I do, Dalton, like, I'm a little skeptical just about the pass catchers in Detroit because Sam Laporta, like, is he going to hit the ground running as a week one starting tight end? Usually history would tell us he's probably not. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs is an epic receiver, that's for sure. But again, are you expecting that to be like the number two or number three targeted player on the team from week one? Because obviously Amon-Ra St. Brown's a stone cold stud. Like, he's going to be great. But we're looking at like maybe Marvin Jones or Josh Reynolds as the wide receiver two for this team. Marvin Jones was really good with the Lions, like, you know, 5-8 years ago, not as much right now.
Yeah, the Jameson Williams suspension is a bummer for sure. And then on the flip side, I could see Kadarius Toney going off in prime time or Rice in an island game and people overreacting like crazy too in the first game of the year. But was it Kareem Hunt as a rookie went crazy on that Thursday night game for the Chiefs? So I could see Rice going nuts, the receiver maybe out of nowhere too. But this is an awesome island game. Great job by the schedule makers here. This will be a fun one to kick off the season.
Another, like, the NFL seems to be buying into this is, are they really buying into the Jordan Love experience here? Because did they make this schedule before the Aaron Rodgers trade happened? It's crazy, Dalton. The Packers got five primetime games. That doesn't even include their Thanksgiving standalone game against those very Detroit Lions. We're going to talk about that one later. But again, 2 4-25 games. The NFL is clearly thinking there's not going to be a ton of drop off here. The other teams with 5+ primetime games this year, Dalton, the Chiefs have 6, the Bills have 6, the Cowboys have 6, the Chargers have 6, the Packers have 5, the Raiders have 5. That's a little mysterious. The Giants have 5, the Jets have 5, the Eagles have 5, the Vikings, the 49ers all have 5. I would say, again, the Raiders, that's definitely an eyebrow raising one. We understand why the Chiefs and Bills and Cowboys, obviously the Cowboys always have to be in prime time. The Chargers have Justin Herbert. The Giants were a good team last year. The Jets just got Aaron Rodgers. The Vikings were a good team last year. Your 49ers will always be really good. Jimmy G with the Raiders. I don't know about that. But then the Packers too. Obviously we're not sitting here saying that the NFL knows something about Jordan Love that we don't or whatever, but I don't know. What's your reaction to the fact we're going to have to see the Raiders and the Packers 5 times in primetime here?
Yeah, no way around it other than that's bizarre. They're both give or take around 65-1 right now to win the Super Bowl, and all those other teams are, you know, 20-1 or better. So it is bizarre. I personally don't have a hot take on Jordan Love one way or the other. I'm curious if you do. I could see that going either way. I mean, obviously, we have seen very tiny sample, and he has impressed more so lately, but it is a bizarre decision. I just praise the schedule makers, but this one is more of a head scratcher. Yeah, the Raiders are always good comedy and usually high scoring and whatnot, so I kind of get that. But yeah, win loss, you look at that projections. These could be some poor decisions later, but isn't there more leeway as far as the maneuverability in these primetime games? But yeah, yes, just looking on the surface, looking at it, yeah, these two teams are one of the bigger long shots. So it's bizarre to have them lead the way as far as primetime scheduling.
I don't necessarily have a hot take about Jordan Love. I think two things are true here, though. Number one, you have heard Matt LaFleur has alluded to this, you know, some team representatives, you know, publicly and privately have started to say like, hey, you know, we put the bat signal out last year that we're high on Jordan Love, but they also want to preach a little bit of patience here. They don't necessarily think he's just going to be like Aaron Rodgers right off the bat, that he's going to be a high end starting quarterback. But I do also think that if these young receivers all take another step, like Christian Watson takes another step, Romeo Doubs takes another step as like a solid number three receiver, if one or both of these tight ends gets off to a nice start, and Jaden Reed, you know I really like Jaden Reed. If these guys are all good, he has a good offensive line, the running game should be good. I do think Matt LaFleur is a good play caller. I think Jordan Love is set up to succeed. It just all comes back to him, and I'm with you. I could kind of see that one going either way.
Yeah, it is bizarre, though, if you just look at it on the surface. Their projections based on the primetime game. But this is a sign the NFL is confident in Love. They're clearly confident that he is going to be a breakout candidate this season.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Last year, after the Russell Wilson trade, the Broncos were like in primetime island games all the time. You know, Scott says on the podcast all the time, he tried like hell to unsubscribe from the 2022 Denver Broncos unsuccessfully. The NFL just kept putting them in front of our face, even though right from the jump, it was like, this is not going to work out the way we think. So who do you think has the best chance to be, quote, this year's Broncos of those teams I mentioned? Chiefs, Bills, Cowboys, Chargers, Packers, Raiders, Giants, Jets, Eagles, Vikings, 49ers. I know you're not going to say the 49ers. Who among that group of team that has the best chance to be the team that's like, you know, Scott and everybody else is trying to unsubscribe from on their TV?
Yeah, even though I did just say the Raiders are usually entertaining, Garoppolo outside of Shanahan could be ugly. Plus, he's always hurt, and you look at the depth chart there. So, yeah, I mean, I hope I'm wrong rooting for Jimmy G, but that actually could not end. That really might end poorly. And we're looking at Aiden O'Connell getting starts in the second half or something. So I think it's kind of screams the Raiders, doesn't it?
It definitely screams the Raiders, man. I agree with you that Garoppolo has started, I think, only two games away from Kyle Shanahan in his career. Like, you kind of think he had more starts under the Patriots, but he got hurt when Brady was in that suspension, like you mentioned. So, I mean, they do have Aiden O'Connell, the rookie quarterback. They also have, like, probably should be a quarterback coach at this point. Brian Hoyer is their technical backup quarterback. And, yeah, I mean, there's – that defense has the chance to just be pretty unwatchable as well. Like, we're talking about, you know, Duke Shelley, Nate Hobbs, Brandon Faison.
All those missed picks will catch up to them. You know, they were drafting Farrell, whatever, top five, when no one had him in the first round. You know, I mean, the Niners just got him for free. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's going to catch up to them. They're bizarre draft choices, too, you know.
100%. Yeah, they absolutely, I think, are the best nomination. Even, again, if Jordan Love is not a – if he's not a star right away, that's one thing. If he's like a stone-cold disaster, which I – kind of doubt he'll be a disaster, but even if he's like a functional NFL quarterback, I still think the Packers are a good team. They have a lot of picks on defense that they've made in the first round. Like, they've loaded that unit up, so they should still be a fine team and be competitive. I think the Raiders have the chance to be pretty disastrous. None of these other teams, I mean, the Giants, I guess, based on your opinion of Daniel Jones, although I think I have so much respect for Brian Daboll. Like, yeah. I don't think they'll be a tough, tough watch. The Vikings could be a little weird. Like, you know, I mean, knock on wood, like something happens to Justin Jefferson. I'm really not trying to watch, you know, Jordan Addison as a number one receiver. Like, Alexander Mattison might be the number one back. I don't know. The Vikings, they have me a little nervous too in that regard. But it would probably take an injury to one of these other teams. But
I like that call, Vikings. I like that call. I mean, Cousins' YPA last year was really a disappointment. I like that call on them.
Again, I do think Jordan Addison is going to help them, but he needs to be the number two receiver, like, you know, which he obviously will be as long as Justin Jefferson is healthy. The last thing I'll say here about the overall take with the schedule, the NFL hates your family. The NFL does not want you to see your family over the holidays. I mean, Dalton's over there like, yep, I'm already ready to hear it from my kids, my wife. At least me, I just have a wife, you know, like, and it's like, hey, we hate the NFL. You hate the NFL for dominating the holidays? Look at the house, okay? Look at all the NFL pays the bills. But kids, that's going to be tough for people with kids this year. Again, absolutely dominant holiday schedule here. We've got Thanksgiving. Now they've got Black Friday games. Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and New Year's Eve all have not just, like, football games. They have juicy season-defining matchups here. Thanksgiving, we've got Packers at Lions. That could go a long way in deciding the NFC North if Jordan Love is good. The Commanders at Cowboys, you know, the NFC East is always weird. 49ers at Seahawks, Dalton. I think you're going to be sweating that game a little bit because, you know, I think the Seahawks are going to be good this year. So how much are you looking forward to the very end of Thanksgiving? I love Thanksgiving. It's my favorite holiday. If I would not want to be in your shoes, 49ers at Seahawks at the end of this thing.
Yeah, and Christmas Day as well, a home game too, and I can only go to the night games, you know, for the writing purposes. So I'll be, yeah, maybe Christmas Day seeing the Lamar Jackson. But yeah, so I'm not a true best ball bro obsessing over week 17. I play the $6 million Survivor in Vegas, though, and they treat Thanksgiving as its own separate week. So if you're lucky enough to get that far. So my point is, that's one of the first things I turn to, these standalone weeks. And last year it was Christmas. I'm curious if they're going to do the same because it's a little different schedule. There's also a Black Friday game this year, too. Right. So one standalone game after Thanksgiving. But yeah, they're always tightly matched, usually contested, especially now that, you know, the Lions are a competitive team. Usually they're close matchups. So it's tough to save one of those six teams on that day for Survivor when the matchups are projected to be, you know, 3-point spread. So yeah, looking at this, my Niners traveling to Seattle at night is certainly not going to be an easy one at all.
Yeah, they can't just get away with sticking like a Bears Lions slop fest in for the first game. You know, like, people on the West Coast, it's 9:30, you know, there's other people putting the turkey on the big green egg, putting the turkey on the Traeger. Like, they're not paying attention to the Lions. You're paying attention to the Lions this year. So there's that. You mentioned the Black Friday game, Dolphins at Jets. I mean, that's a huge one. Like, listen, sorry, family. I know I ignored you all yesterday for the holiday, looking at these three football games. Guess what? It's going to happen again for Dolphins and Jets, because that's a big game. Christmas Eve, full slate of football. Dallas at Miami, 4:25. I can't imagine why producer Colin highlighted that on the slate of all the games. Full slate of game. We've got Dallas at Miami, 4:25. Christmas, Raiders at Chiefs. We'll see. Giants at Eagles. That's a big NFC matchup. You mentioned your 49ers. They'll be welcoming the Baltimore Ravens. That should be a big game. And then New Year's Eve, full slate of football. Bengals at Chiefs, Packers at Vikings for Sunday Night Football. I mean, yeah. Say goodbye to your families in August. You will not be seeing them again, and you will not even be seeing them for the holidays this year, Dalton. Tough break for us football fans out there. Hopefully everybody's marriage and, you know, relationships and your dynamic with your kids, hopefully it can survive this onslaught by the NFL on holidays this year.
Truthfully, I'm not complaining. I love football. I love watching it. The standalone games are tougher when you're used to everything at once. And I am a little worried about YouTube, the delay there. So that's one of my concerns entering the NFL season with the game mix channels, how that's going to work. But man, who's complaining about all these standalone games? Who wants to be with their family? I mean, come on, it's the NFL. This is great.
It's good. Yeah, hey, you get your family into football and you can all watch together, okay? That's the solution. Football is family, as they like to say. Football, make it about your family. Make it a holiday thing, and you'll keep it moving. I'm with you, though, Dalton. I'm trying to be performatively like concerned for people out there. I don't care. More football is better.
And you and I get the excuse of us, our jobs, too. Most people, you know, don't get that benefit that we can blame our work.
Yeah, listen, family. Also, I mean, all my friends, especially when we get when I get back to Virginia, all my friends like love football. So honestly, isn't this better than the alternative? Now I'm fully coming around here that really, Dalton, like now I don't have to have some conversation about, all right, you know, how are your kids? How are you putting new shades on the window? I don't know.
How's the weather? The weather.
How's the weather? You know, you pay that much in HOA fees? Now it's like, damn, did you see Jordan Love lighting up the Lions? That was crazy. Okay, so you know what? Fully come around to it. Jacoby Brissett is lighting up the Cowboys right now in a big upset. Yeah, that's much more entertaining than typical holiday talk. You've convinced me. Forget the families. This is better.
Yeah, and the wife's down to go see the Niners play on Christmas Day, so we'll be good. We'll be good. It'll all work out. But yeah, I mean, Dolphins at Jets on Black Friday, that could be an AFC Championship game this year. I mean, that's some exciting matchups. I like the forward thinking. It appears the NFL did. Of course, this will all look like, you know, disaster 2 months into the year, or actually 2 weeks into the year, but it does look pretty like some pretty sweet primetime games during the holidays.
Do people still do Black Friday, like the in-person nonsense?
Isn't it all in the exactly. It's got to all be cyber, I would imagine. So yeah, it's no problem. You can just do your cyber deals and watch the game at the same time.
Yeah, grab your phone, you know, put it up on your gut from eating too much food the day before, have the cooler next to you. And, you know, I mean, by the way, all these damn companies, what the hell am I talking about? All these damn companies, you know, they send you like email marketing. Oh, early Black Friday starting at Wednesday. So who cares? The NFL is all that matters. Football is all that matters. Okay. Last thing before we get into our big activity here today, wanted to read off the top five and bottom five strength of schedules. And I know you're not supposed to do it on opponent win percentage. You know, the smart football guys will put you in jail for this, but I'm still going to do it anyways. The five hardest schedules, from opponent win percentage last year: Eagles, Dolphins, Giants, Patriots, Cowboys. Oh, poor Colin. The Cowboys get banged again. The Patriots can't catch a break. They could use a few breaks, but they're playing in a tough division there. So those are your five hardest schedules, Dalton. The five easiest schedules: the Atlanta Falcons, the New Orleans Saints, Houston Texans, Indianapolis Colts, Tennessee Titans. Obviously, you know, bad divisions there, but any interesting things stand out for you from between those bottom and top five?
Well, the real standouts, even when you use projected win totals, so not using last year's win, but using Vegas projected wins this year, the Patriots stand out as the hardest schedule in football this year, and the Saints and Falcons stand out as the two by far easiest schedules. So for what it's worth, who knows? Things change, as I just mentioned, but if you're into Bijan Robinson,
Bijan Robinson,
really into him. Bijan Robinson, thank you. I'm going to mess up all these rookies' names multiple times, but It's certainly not bad to look at that projected schedule and look at it be very, very favorable. I mean, if playing with the lead, you know, running back going to get a ton of touches. So yeah, those are the outliers. And then a bunch in the middle. My 49ers, you look at it your way from last year, they're like middle, but you look at projected Vegas, they're the fifth easiest for what it's worth. Mm. There are teams like that, if you want to look at like that, some go the opposite way, but the real outliers, it looks like Saints, Falcons, and then conversely, Patriots look like they have a very, very difficult schedule on paper.
All right, let's get into it. Here's how we're going to do this exercise. We will pose one of the biggest questions of the NFL season, and then we're going to identify the game or games this year where we're going to kind of know the answer to that question. And let's bring it back to your Detroit Lions here, Dalton. When are we going to know that the Lions are for real? Obviously, I pinpointed a couple of ones here. Week one, the Lions at Chiefs, the season opener, that's going to be a pretty good indication. I also think, again, bring it back to Thanksgiving. I think how they play the Packers in Detroit, that'll be an interesting indicator. But really, I think the real answer, Dalton, like week 16, week 17, they're going to Minnesota. They're going to Dallas in those games. We know that this offense struggled to travel a little bit. Jared Goff has been much better inside the dome than outside of it. I think that's when we're really going to know, like, are the Lions a real true blue NFC contender, or are they still kind of one of these like middling NFC teams?
Yeah, and it seems like teams more and more treat the preseason less seriously. So as much as I want to say week one, we'll know right away. It'll just be an audition for the real stuff later in the year. So no pushback here at Vikings at Dallas. That's a tough stretch there. But I think we'll know the Lions are real right away because I think they're going to be competitive even in that first game. So yes, we'll find out for sure at the end stretch there. But I think the Lions are going to be the real deal right away.
Well, how do you feel about the whole Jameson Williams thing? Because it's just really tough, Dalton, like when people ask me about him now, that I think he's a big factor in this whole discussion, right? Like the first 6 weeks of the season, they're going to be missing a really key piece, but that key piece, we're going to get a year and a half into his career, and he's still mostly like a theory, right? Because we barely saw anything out of him last year, which I think is fine and understandable, but I don't know. He's a tough guy to figure because I think he's really important to the 2023 Detroit Lions. But again, you really kind of have to completely just go back to your college evaluation on the player.
And maybe I'm underrating their missing wide receiver too there. I mean, Laporta, rookie tight ends. I mean, they traded Hawkinson. Gibbs, yeah. He's a rookie. I mean, I know Swift has his issues, but so maybe I'm underrating that fact. I mean, Marvin Jones, how old is he? And no Jameson Williams, even if he's great right away, no matter what. Obviously, he's going to miss the first 6 weeks. So maybe I'm underrating that. I do know I've crept up. St. Brown is higher and higher in PPR. Yeah. I'm just going to get so many targets. But maybe I am underrating that fact that they really are missing a second wide receiver here. I mean, when you factor in the question marks at tight end as well, I mean, obviously the defense, as much as they have improved, is still the Lions defense. So they certainly entered the year with their fair share of question marks. And it might be highlighted by the Jameson Williams situation because, what, he had two touches and two touchdowns. Wasn't there a rush and one was called back too? So he's so flashed amazing ability coming back off a torn ACL. He was the fastest receiver recorded 1 week late in the year. So there's a lot of upside. Mm. But yeah, you've questioned his, you know, route running, and we just have no clue who he is at this point, obviously, with such a tiny sample and coming off the injury.
I know the Cardinals say, like, hey, DeAndre Hopkins is going to be on our team this year. I still kind of don't think he's going to be on the week one roster. Do you think the Lions could be a sneaky DeAndre Hopkins team? They have the third most cap space in the NFL right now. Like we just talked about, the receivers beyond Amon-Ra St. Brown, who is an absolute, I think, ready to make the jump to superstar this year. I think by the end of the year, honestly, probably in those first 6 weeks, we're going to really start talking about him, how we should talk about him, like as one of these superstar type receivers, especially in the slot receiver mold. The guys beyond him, it's Josh Reynolds, it's Marvin Jones, like we mentioned, it's Khalif Raymond, you know, Trinity Benson, like they really didn't make any additions at wide receiver. And the tight ends were productive as a unit last year. Brock Wright, Shane Zylstra, like these guys actually had a lot of weird touchdowns, but those guys are guys, and Sam Laporta is a rookie tight end. So I don't know, Dalton. I feel like, you know, I don't know if he's a Dan Campbell, you know, if it's a Dan Campbell type of move to bring in DeAndre Hopkins, but they are an NFC contender. I feel like the Lions would be the right type of team to take a chance on Hopkins, especially when they need like an outside the numbers X receiver guy here. And I don't know if Jared Goff and DeAndre Hopkins, that's like a perfect overlap of skill sets. But I don't know. It's something to keep your eye on there.
Yeah, it seems like that would fill a need for sure. And it certainly seemed like Hopkins was out the door. I fear as a 49ers fan that the Arizona is going to totally tank and trade Kyler Murray and have Caleb Williams and maybe even Marvin Harrison Jr. in their two early picks next year. So Hopkins should remain on the trade block, and that would be a real interesting fit if he joined Detroit. I like that fit there.
Okay, next one here. Are the Jets legit with Aaron Rodgers? Obviously, that's another big question about the season. I got three games here that I think we will kind of know the answer to that. Number one, Bills at Jets, Monday Night Football, week one. I think, obviously, people are going to react extremely harshly one way or another based on how that Jets game goes against the Bills there. The Chiefs at Jets in week four on Sunday Night Football. Like I mentioned, we're going to see a lot of Aaron Rodgers and the Jets in standalone primetime games. And they're the Black Friday game, like we talked about earlier as well, Dolphins at Jets. I think those three games, again, different chapters of the season. Like, it'd be great if they got off to a hot start week 1-4. That would be awesome. But really, like, as you mentioned, some of these teams that don't take preseason seriously, and I don't expect Aaron Rodgers to be out there, you know, working on his in-game chemistry with Garrett Wilson in preseason. Probably Black Friday around then is when we're really going to know. And like, damn, as much as I like the Dolphins, if the Jets aren't better than the Dolphins this year, that's a pretty disappointing outcome here for Aaron Rodgers with this team.
Yeah, I like the Black Friday call just because Aaron Rodgers, you know, who knows, acclimating himself to an entirely new environment there may take a while. Assuming Aaron Rodgers is not washed, I think the Jets are right there among the favorites to win the AFC. Yeah. They allowed the fewest yards per play last year, tied with the Eagles, and they're dealing with horrible quarterback play. I mean, that just really affects the defense in tough to measure ways. And now you got, you know, Rodgers with Garrett Wilson in year two, some other weapons there, and Breece Hall. They're pretty loaded top to bottom. So yeah, assuming Rodgers is not washed, I think they're going to be contenders, and that Black Friday game could be fun. I don't know. I wouldn't just totally write off the Dolphins. I mean, Tua, Waddle, yeah, and Tyreek Hill are two of the best in NFL history combo. What is Tua's YPA last year? 9.4 or something. So if he's healthy and you got McDaniel there, I don't know. I think that they're absolutely right there in the handful of contenders too. Of course, it comes down to Tua's health, but.
No, totally. I'm not ruling out the Dolphins being a really good team. I just think that when you look at them, I'm just saying from a Jets perspective, like, if they aren't better than the Dolphins this year, if they're the third team in their division, even if their division is really good, like, there's no shame in not being as good as the Bills. The Bills are a great team. You know, there are obviously concerns about the Dolphins, but there's really a high ceiling there as well. But still, you trade for Aaron Rodgers on this roster. They believe they are like a Super Bowl team. That's a pretty big disappointment. One thing that I'm really confident in the Jets this year, I saw Dan Pizzuta from Sharp Football make this point. Typically, we think like, oh, defense is really not sticky year to year, and it's very volatile. Typically, because these teams that are kind of out of nowhere, great defenses, like the Jets went from not a great defense in 2021 to a great defense last year, it's usually boosted by like big time turnover rates. The Jets only had 16 turnovers last year, which was the third fewest in the league. It was actually just like they allowed 4.8 yards per play. Like, that again, it's still tough to have that be sticky every single year, but if they can be that type of team and not just rely on turnovers, if their defense is even just like as good or even slightly worse than it was last year, and Rodgers makes the offense better, like, we're cooking with gas there basically. And I don't think it's necessarily as worrisome as typically these defensive regression type situations are.
I'll throw a deep fantasy nugget here while we're on the Jets. Speaking of unable to pronounce names, but Abanaconda, been reading really intriguing things. I think he was a steal and a nice, maybe he's the RB2 behind Hall, obviously coming up the major injury, but really like him and is a dynasty sleeper there. I don't know. People like their draft. I think the Jets are loaded. I totally get what you're saying. Their expectations should be higher than the Dolphins. I totally understand your point.
Yeah, Israel Abanaconda, fifth round pick, big time athlete. Yeah, I think he's got a little, he could be like a bit of a Pacheco guy. Like, he just runs, man. You know, I think he runs with blinders on a little bit more than Pacheco does. He's not as good as like a tackle breaker as Pacheco, but like Pacheco made that roster early on in the year because he was good as a kick returner. And I think Abanaconda will have to do the same. That's a pretty deep backfield there, like theoretically, right? Like Breece Hall, Michael Carter, Zonovan Bam Knight had his moments last year too. So yeah, All those guys were better than James Robinson, which is a tough scene. But yeah, I think that's a good call out, though. Like, I wonder if we'll see Israel Abanaconda on the active roster if he ends up winning the kick return job. But all right, next
Garrett,
one here.
Garrett Wilson or Amon-Ra St. Brown, PPR?
I'm going St. Brown, dude.
Okay.
I'm going St. Brown.
I think what even I have to do that. I love Wilson so much, but the way this is shaking out, I think St. Brown's the answer in PPR.
Third-year receiver versus second-year receiver. So that 1 year, that's pretty much like you're out of Dalton Del Don's clubhouse. And if you're in your third year, you got to be rookie or second year to be. Yeah. He's St. Brown third year. He's kind of over the hill at this point, man. You know.
Yeah. That's funny you say because I'm just really the more I think about Cooper Kupp. Normally I'm not. You know, the old guy is way washed, but dude, he might get 250 targets. Like I love his setup too. I mean, I could see an easy argument for him as the number one PPR player this year.
100%. It's just like if Matthew Stafford gets hurt, we're looking at Stetson Bennett. But then what is Stetson Bennett going to do other than throw 20 times to Cooper Kupp in a game if he has to get in there? So, yeah, I'm with you, though. It's hard to not put. I'm very enticed by Ja'Marr Chase this year. Like, I think he could have a Justin Jefferson type of season from last year, even though he has better complementary players. But it's hard to not have Cooper Kupp as the second receiver just with the amount of targets he's projected for. Let's try to figure out who are the biggest threats to Kansas City in the AFC and go team by team here to answer these questions. So for the Ravens, can they be a legit threat to the Chiefs in the AFC? And my question for them is, when are we going to know, has this offense actually evolved? I wrote in a column this week, Dalton, that like, I want people to like let this be the last moment that you think about the Ravens as, you know, the Greg Roman boomer ball Ravens. Like with Todd Monken, they're not going to look like that. But is that true? I think we will know pretty early. I put it week two at the Cincinnati Bengals. If that game doesn't turn into, you know, kind of an offensive barn burner, and look, Lamar will be getting used to a new offense. He'll still be kind of figuring things out with Odell Beckham, with Zay Flowers, these new guys. But nevertheless, if we're not talking about a big time game here in week two, I think those folks who are going to get really high on the Ravens offense, including your boy, like we'll get a little nervous.
Oh yeah, this will be fun. A super high total. Can't wait to see what this offense could do with a healthy Bateman, Beckham, and Flowers, J.K. Dobbins too. So I'm with you right away. Week two in Cincinnati. Let's go.
I just can't wait to overdraft. Like, I just can't wait to overdraft the hell out of all these Ravens receivers, man. Yeah. I want to make sure. There's always one offense, Dalton, that you got to get pieces of that offense to win in fantasy. Like that, really, just everybody sort of outkicks their expectations. It could be Baltimore. Like, I want to make sure that I take a Ravens receiver in every draft this year. It doesn't have to be like one particular. I don't want to get too married to Bateman or too married to Beckham. I think any of these guys could be really good. So they're definitely a team I'll be watching extremely closely. Jaguars. This is another team that I think could be like the fantasy goldmine offense. Are they going to be a big threat to Kansas City in the AFC? And really, I think a lot of it hinges on what impact does Calvin Ridley make for this offense. I said week 7, Thursday night football game in New Orleans. I think that's when we'll have a full answer on was Calvin Ridley, back to typical standards. And man, I just can't overstate enough like how good this guy was as a route runner. Even his last season with the Atlanta Falcons in 2021, he was awesome. He was getting great separation. It just wasn't always happening in contested situations. But, the Jaguars, the first 7 weeks of the season, they go to Indianapolis. They get Kansas City at home in week two. That's obviously a big matchup. They get the Texans, the Falcons, the Bills, the Colts. Like, okay, if Calvin Ridley's cutting up the Falcons, he's cutting up the Texans. Revenge game, by the way.
Yeah,
revenge game for Calvin Ridley week four. But, like, he cuts up the Texans and Falcons. Big whoop. That matchup in New Orleans, it's a Thursday night game. It's an isolated game. I think that's when, if Calvin Ridley really takes off, that's when people will start to talk about it from a national perspective. Like, oh, he is actually the Stephon Diggs to Trevor Lawrence's Josh Allen.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence is clearly the real deal. I'm totally in on Ridley. But wow, 33 rankers, and his expert consensus rank is the wide receiver 13 right now. So rankers are in, man. And that's a long time off. I wouldn't fight it, especially after you look at the first dozen or so. Definitely a tier in which he has as much upside as anyone. So you were in on his route running. And it's just obviously tough. We saw Deshaun Watson take a whole year off. Hopefully Ridley can thrive in this offense and with a star quarterback throwing him the ball. So why not treat him as a top 15 wideout? I get it, right? I mean, you're on board, right? I mean, he flashed the talent to, yeah. Or is that a little, or are we getting too high now? Cause I you questioned that last time I brought it up as a top 20 guy. So you really might be, you know, questioning top 12.
The only thing is, I think there's also kind of a lot of competition for targets here because Evan Engram is basically, you know, he plays like in the slot a ton. He kind of does some slot receiver stuff. Christian Kirk, I don't want to go another season of people disrespecting Christian Kirk. I had Christian Kirk on so many teams last year because people were totally willing to discount him. I think he could, and him and Trevor Lawrence had a lot of moments as that vertical slot receiver. So yeah, Ridley, definitely what this offense needs is an outside separator, a guy that can beat press man coverage. But there's certainly, you know, some questions to ask with Ridley as an individual player. No matter how excited I was about him a year and a half ago, the last time we saw him play football, there are individual questions with him as a player. And I still think there's a lot of dudes that are going to command the football here, in addition to their running back, who's really good as well, Travis Etienne.
Yeah, that's a question with Tank Bigsby making some noise. Will he hurt ETN? That's definitely a situation fantasy managers should be monitoring. But yes, I love this team's upside. They'll be one of my, they're the, you know, the AFC's version of Detroit, a team if you can get odds you like, absolutely have the upside to win their conference.
Okay, next one here. Look, we got to put the Bengals here, even though they've sort of been, I think the question for them is basically just like, are they still neck and neck-ish with Kansas City? Obviously, they beat them in the AFC Championship 2021 season. They lose to them last year. They did the whole Burrowhead thing. The mayor got involved. The mayor had a couple issues. He making that video last year, he made another one, I think I saw, where he was basically like, yep, only going to say that the Bengals and Chiefs are playing in week 17. And I think that week 17 game is when we will know, basically just another indicator of how much are they still neck and neck with Kansas City. There's not a ton to really say about the Bengals because they're, you know, other than like, oh, they're rolling Irv Smith out at tight end this year, as opposed to Hayden Hurst in the Joe Burrow tight end rehabilitation tour. I don't know, not a ton to say about the Bengals, but I think that week 17 game is going to be important for them.
What a fantasy championship. Bengals at Kansas True. City should be fun for best ballers or if you're in your home league, whatever. That'll be fun. High scoring. The question mark with Cincinnati fantasy is, you know, what's Joe Mixon's deal? But yeah, they're the real deal. Burrow's awesome. One of the three most valuable players in the NFL, and they're going to be contenders for as long as he's their quarterback.
100%. But yeah, there's just not a ton to say with them. But yeah, the running back situation for fantasy is definitely the biggest one. Okay, next one here for AFC. I've got the Chargers. And my question here is, was this actually kind of sneakily, really, truly, finally, actually the Chargers year? Their roster still has obviously a ton of good players on it, right? Especially on offense. The defense is a little bit more questionable. They add Quentin Johnston to an already, when healthy, good receiver room. They have Eckler. The offensive line, I think, should take a step forward. But I think when we're going to know if this was actually sort of sneakily their year, obviously, really, the playoffs, they need to win a playoff game. I kind of think they need to win a playoff game for that entire coaching staff to not get wiped out. But I think weeks 6 to 10 will be a good indicator for them. In this stretch, they have the Dallas Cowboys. They go to Kansas City to play the Chiefs. They get the Bears. They get the Jets on Monday Night Football in New York, and then they have the Lions coming to LA in week 10. I think this is an important stretch for them. You know, they've got big time NFC contenders in Dallas and the Lions. They obviously have two interconference, even one interdivision with the Chiefs. And then like they have the Bears in there, and they better like smack around the Bears in LA, right? Like if they're a true contending team, they'll just wipe the floor with the Bears, even if the Bears have improved. So I don't know. I think if the Chargers are actually going to be as good, if they're going to finally like reach their potential that we always get excited about, that will be a good stretch, a good indicating stretch for them.
Yeah, how about the Cowboys, Kellen Moore, revenge game? I'm just so curious what Justin Herbert does with the new offensive coordinator. Yes, his ADOT is infuriating, but he's also constantly checking down to Austin Ekeler. I'm not sure whose fault it is exactly. So is Quentin Johnston, he's a field stretcher, right? So I'm curious what he can do here with a new coordinator and maybe some better options downfield. Because Herbert's obviously a star. He's awesome. But I don't know. He's been given a pass on all this ADOT, but he throws to Ekeler all the time. I mean, like, he just, that's his choice too. So I'm super curious to see him in a new system.
Some of it some of it's good, I think, when he checks down to Ekeler, because, you know, they get a ton of first downs in those, but some of them are definitely Justin Herbert issues. Like, he is and this is a good thing. Like, he is such a quick processor. He gets through the reads, but I think sometimes he really needs to hang in there and you'll fire the ball downfield a little more often, take a little more chances. Cause I can't remember now where I heard this. It was like an interview where somebody brought it up that, like, he is so anti, like, making mistakes that he doesn't want to throw interceptions. He doesn't want to commit turnovers. I can't remember where I heard this now. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to give proper credit, but, like, that's why he gets to those checkdowns so quickly sometimes. And again, Eckler's a good guy to check it down to. It's not the worst thing in the world. It's not like you're checking down to some, like, you know, just banger back with no hands. You're checking down to one of the better pass catching backs in the NFL. I don't know. I think it's interesting kind of watching Herbert, if he is able to get some of those, not bad habits, but limiting habits out of his game and really takes more chances. And, you know, Quentin Johnston can obviously be part of that, but I also won't be surprised if Quentin Johnston takes a little time to get ramped up. And it's not like he's going to play ahead of Mike Williams or Keenan Allen. Like, he should be playing ahead of Josh Palmer, but he's more of like a yards after catch player. So, I mean, hey, if he checks down to a guy like that, he can make a lot of plays with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and I see him bringing back Keenan Allen. There was a question there for a while, but it makes the most sense returning to L.A. But, yeah, that's what I'm most curious about, to see Herbert with the new offensive coordinator.
Okay, let's move to the NFC. Who will be the biggest threats to the Eagles in the NFC? We've got mostly just like inner NFC matchups here. So week 4, Seahawks at Giants, Monday Night Football. You know, again, these are both surprising playoff teams, big expectations this year. The question with the Seahawks is this offense going to be, you know, even more explosive than it was last year? And kind of same question for the Giants here. Like, they're pretty much not mirror images of each other at all, but I think the overall questions about both teams is, can they roll over some of the surprising play that they got out of their quarterbacks last year and potentially even take another step?
Yeah, I liked both of these teams' drafts as well. Pete Carroll deserves a ton of credit. I thought they're going to have some down years after the Russell Wilson era, and he turned it around. What a trade, one of the best ever. And yeah, they just reloaded there. I can't believe JSN ended up in Seattle. And they look like one of the contenders. And the Giants, I think, I've been a Daniel Jones guy, and Dable is just going to get the best out of him. Fantasy managers obviously paying attention to Barkley, but that should be a fun one Monday night, Seattle in New York. They have to travel the most. It's like it every year. Niners are number two, but Seattle, the team that has to travel the most mileage among any team this year. It's just part of you have to deal with that being a West Coast team.
Yeah, I mean, they're all the way up there. they're very top left-hand corner of the country there. And, you know, most of the teams are East Coast. So you kind of get banged in that way. It is what it is. Yeah. Even going like from Seattle to Arizona is going to be a tough one, you know, from a travel perspective. So yeah, the Seahawks always get kind of banged there. Week 5, Cowboys at 49ers, Sunday night football game. The question obviously for the 49ers is, will we know who their quarterback is? Like, will we know what the quarterback situation looks like by then? You know, this is where, Dalton, you have a chance to go on your Trey Lance, every episode soliloquy here. You could tell me about how Kyle Shanahan's out here gassing up Sam Darnold. He's ready. He's ready to get on the Sam Darnold bandwagon. Of course, Brock Purdy looms in the distance. I think that's the big question with the 49ers, but there's also a lot of pressure on Dallas to win this game as well, Dalton. Or, you know, as producer Colin pointed out to me earlier, that's going to be 3 straight losses to the Niners, with the last 2 ending their season. And I think the big question for Dallas, is this where like the Mike McCarthy hot seat watch starts? Because, you know, everybody's going to be ready and willing to put Big Mike on the hot seat ASAP.
10 of the quarterbacks drafted last month are older than Trey Lance. I don't have a take on the Purdy Lance Darnold situation. The Niners are just have the best depth they've had at the most important position in a few years or many years. But they're all three could get injured as well. Yeah, the Cowboys here, producer Collins really fired up here if they lose this one because it's, as you said, they've ended their season the last two times, so this should be a fun one in Sunday Night Football. So yeah, that's one to earmark there. I might even be able to go to that one. That should be a good one.
Oh yeah, we need you reporting on the ground on that one.
Ayuk's route running. Yeah, I'll report it like it's done. Yeah. So what we got, the Eagles and Niners, and I feel the next one. I feel like you guys are just trolling me with who will be the biggest threat to the Eagles in the NFC. Come on now.
Well, we're just doing Super Bowl teams, okay?
Yeah. Oh, so okay. Okay. Right.
It's just the like who was in the Super Bowl last year. So listen,
Niners were on a 12-game winning streak with nine of those wins by double digits when they rolled into that Eagles game and didn't have a functional quarterback.
Did you know they also had more yards per play Purdy got hurt for 2 seconds or 2 seconds into or whatever?
They finished the game with nearly more yards per play, the entire game, that game.
How could I have forgotten?
Somebody gave me a hard time for throwing that stat. Yeah, what a ubiquitous stat that is, yards per play. Anyway, all right, so Niners at Eagles, another fun one, week 13. That'll be a good rematch. Niners will probably be on their fourth, their fourth quarterback by then, but still it'll be competitive. But we'll see. The Niners, on in all honesty, talking about teams where drafts will catch up to them, that big Lance trade, maybe it'll catch up to them, and they've made a couple of swing and misses too. So maybe their window is closing here. Nick Bosa wants to get paid. Ayuk, that was like a question to picking up his fifth option because not really to pick it up, but he's definitely a candidate to get traded because you can't pay all these guys. I mean, they have a lot of marquee names. So Niners, this actually, you made the joke, they're always good, that you know this could be one of the window could be closing, but the quarterback position is obviously one of the biggest question marks entering the 2023 season.
Brandon Allen is the fourth quarterback on this roster. He's been on the Rams. He's been on the Bengals, obviously kind of that same coaching tree. So yeah, maybe he's starting by that Eagles game. No, but seriously, I mean, they're just so well set up outside of the quarterback position. I think it's probably the best roster in the NFL right now, even though there are some questions on defense. But overall, like, I don't know. I think they're right there with the Eagles. It's just the problem is the quarterback stuff, which we talk about every episode. But yeah, I can't believe somebody got mad at you about yards per play. That's like, come on, give me a break. It's not like a random stat. All right, let's move into some kind of not rapid fire, but some fun one-off ones here in terms of these questions. My question here, when are we going to know, is Russell Wilson either fixed or is he for sure broken? I said week 8. This is their week 1-8 schedule here. Raiders, Commanders, Dolphins, Bears, Jets, Chiefs, Packers, Chiefs. Like that Chiefs, Packers, Chiefs stretch there, that's the real indicator. I don't care what he's doing against, you know, the Bears or anything like that, but I think by week 8 we'll know, is this Sean Payton, Russell Wilson marriage actually working, or is this really just like Payton's got his eye on the next thing and he might even start Jarrett Stidham at some point this year?
Yeah, that's a good as game as any week 8 against the Chiefs. This is a fascinating situation. Did you see them sitting next, Sean Payton and Russell Wilson sitting next to each courtside during a playoff, NBA playoff game, and Payton's wife was in between them, and it was reportedly completely happenstance and not planned. So it's really funny if that's true, and there was like awkward conversations with Payton showing him something on his cell phone. But yeah, this could go either way for sure. Wilson could be out of their long-term plans by week 8 or even sooner, but he did show some signs of life at the end of last season, and boy, they have a pretty good receiving core on paper.
Yeah, he was showing him Marvin Mims route running highlights, you know? Okay. He's like, dude, look at this guy Marvin Mims getting open. You remember how he used to throw those moon shots to Tyler Lockett? That's going to be your new guy there, Marvin Mims. I don't care about Cortland Sutton. I don't care. Tim Patrick's right down the row here. I don't care. Don't care about this Jerry Jeudy guy, Marvin Mims. Russell, that's your guy. That's probably what he's showing him on his phone. Next one here, Anthony Richardson. We will know he has been unlocked and unleashed by Indy in week 4 versus the LA Rams. I think that's a good time to kind of take a look. This is potentially where we could see Anthony Richardson make his season debut if they don't want to start him week one. Week one's against the Jacksonville Jaguars. They get the Texans, the Ravens, and yeah, the Rams week four. Covered this on a recent podcast with Scott Dalton, but like, have you seen the Rams defensive depth chart? It is quite a weird group. So if you're looking for a soft landing spot for Anthony Richardson, if you don't want to start him week one, I still maintain he's going to end up starting week one. But if he doesn't, and even if he does start week one and he gets off to like a slower start against the Jaguars, even the Texans, like we'll see what their defense looks like. The Ravens, that's a tough one. But yeah, I mean, there's a good chance like Anthony Richardson's cutting up the Rams based on what their defensive depth chart looks like. Although obviously they still have Aaron Donald. I think that's a good one to know. Like, what are we going to get out of this rookie quarterback, Anthony Richardson, with the Colts this year?
That's a fair one at home, not too late into the season. But fantasy managers, the sooner the better. They're treating him like a top 12 is ADP quarterback. And I get it, because his floor should be high, too, even if he's so raw as a passer because of that rushing. So the earlier, the better, man. I do like Gardner Minshew, but yeah, we all want to see Anthony Richardson, and it sounds like the GM and everyone is on board as far as the best way to learn is to actually get that experience on the field. So the sooner the better.
Yeah, totally agree with you there. This offense is going to look so dramatically different with, I mean, because you saw this with Gardner Minshew last year with the Eagles, where that was that one game against the Cowboys. It was definitely different than Hurts, but it was fine. But then the game against the Saints, it was kind of a disaster. And, you know, it's just, again, it's a very different offense based on those players' skill sets. And you'd have the same situation with Anthony Richardson and Gardner Minshew here in Indianapolis. So I think the sooner the better. I'm with you. Next one here. When are we going to know, was Matt Harmon an idiot to be so excited about the Atlanta Falcons? I got this one early, Dalton, week three at Detroit. That could be an offensive fire show. Two teams that project to be maybe better on defense, but I still think have a long way to go. Jeff Okuda revenge game in that one, by the way, if he, you know, actually like sticks and starts for the Atlanta Falcons here. But again, Lions defense indoors in Detroit, you know, the Falcons defense could get worked over by the Lions offense. If we don't see Desmond Ridder, you know, play efficiently against this Lions defense, if we don't see Bijan Robinson cutting up the Lions front seven, you know, Drake London making big plays, Kyle Pitts making big plays, you know, Arthur Smith, like the concepts actually turning into production, I'd be a little concerned week three versus the Lions.
Yeah, Robinson's going to be a first-round fantasy pick. We'll all be drafting London high. Pitts, obviously, we're going to be overdrafting him as usual. So it's a big problem if Ridder doesn't live up to just being, you know, competent. So we're all relying on that with these tight end, top five tight end, top 20 wide receiver, and a first round fantasy pick with the backfield. So yeah, we'll probably know right away. Do we make a big mistake if Ridder looks like, you know, he's a shaky a month into the season?
Another one too that I think is going to be settled early was Deshaun Watson's six game disaster last year, a blip week two at Pittsburgh. If he's a disaster in that game, I'm going to get a little nervous because, again, I'm not like rooting for Deshaun Watson or anything, but I do think they have enough. They're another team that has a chance to be one of those offenses that you can get a ton of value out of in fantasy. Like, they have so many interesting receivers. They have a tight end who could be really good. They have a bell cow running back. Watson himself could end up being a nice value as a quarterback this year. I think we'll know pretty early. Okay, was last year just a blip, or is this the future? Week two at Pittsburgh.
It's huge. Deshaun Watson's being ranked as a top 10 fantasy QB right now. So he does have to show dramatic improvement based on how he played last year. So there's a lot of ramifications here. Of course, we love Elijah Moore's bounce back, just like Ayuk did in the new surroundings here. But Nick Chubb has an argument to be the number one fantasy back in half PPR. He really does. Yep. With Kareem Hunt gone. And if Watson is a superstar he was a few years ago, Chubb's awesome. So, I mean, it's huge is how Watson performs now with another year of season. He claims it's night and day, totally different than, you know, than where he was a year ago here. So I know, like I said, fantasy managers and rankers are certainly treating him with expectations that there's going to be a massive improvement compared to last year.
He was on some like show, or it might have been like a Twitter Spaces, I can't remember, and he was saying like, you know, I can't be defined on my six games versus everything with Cleveland versus everything else I've done in my career. And, you know, it's a fair point. These are problems of his own making, but nevertheless, like, I don't know if he's better this year. This is going to be an interesting offense for fantasy. Another one here. When are we going to know if the Titans tried to push this Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, no wide receivers team identity 1 year too long? I think we're going to know by their week 7 bye. They play the Saints, Chargers, Browns, Bengals, Colts, Ravens in weeks 1-6. That's not a easy schedule. I mean, there are some teams in there that could be pretty challenging. You know, the Titans are always competitive. We get it. But like, if Derrick Henry doesn't get off to his typical super fast start, if Ryan Tannehill's a little shaky, the offensive line, Peter Skoronski, takes a moment to get hot. Treylon Burks is the guy he was as a rookie and not the player that people think he is. There's a chance by week 7, we're like, all right, Titans are already looking to next year. Will Levis might get some playing time. I think that's about the time we're going to know with the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, my early drafts have been kind of fading old man Henry, usually a mistake. And I like Tannehill, so I've been going after Burks and Chig, but that could go disastrous if they use that bye week to put in Will Levis, you know, for the second half of the season. So that's a great call that they have a tough schedule on paper to open the year with those first couple months. And yeah, you got a rookie quarterback starting, you know, week 9 or something. Those receivers could have maybe it's 2024 when Burks and Chig are the real breakouts if it goes that route. But I like with Tannehill's there and a team that's usually playing from ahead, you know, playing ahead with Henry now with the, you know, shakier defense and, you know, with Henry battling the injuries and just age, it could go well too. Burks and Chig could see all the targets from Tannehill. There's also a range of outcomes where both those guys are two of the better fantasy picks this year.
Dude, you're discounting Kyle Phillips. I kind of Phillips.
Yeah, he was impressive last year. Yeah,
I kind of like. I mean, yeah, it was very very short stint there, but I kind of liked him as a sleeper slot receiver when he came into the draft last year out of UCLA. I don't know. He could be interesting, but it's just a young receiver core. They're another team I think could be, I think it'd be a little bit jumping the shark, you know, too much, but they're another team I could see trying to make a play for DeAndre Hopkins. They were, you know, rumors that they were trying to get him involved in the third overall pick package at some point, but it didn't work out when they were trying to get up there with the Arizona Cardinals, but they just need like a veteran receiver in that room. Although they've had bad luck with getting like 30 plus year old receivers in back-to-back years with Julio Jones, with Robert Woods. I don't know if they're going to do that again. Okay.
I'm listening to you on Christian Watson, but I keep drafting Burks aggressively. You do think he can develop more, right? It's not this, right? Is there,
I don't know.
Okay. No. Okay. You are pretty skeptical on him. All right. But man, the situation seems so good and he's flash, but okay. So you definitely worry about his route running. All right.
Yeah, he's just such a limited player. Like he runs like slants and crossers, and he can win contested, but that's about it. Like he was a big project player coming into the league. Like he played in such a goofy role in college. He was always in the slot or in the backfield, and the Titans were like, nope, big body guy. We're gonna stick him at X receiver, where I think he probably would have been a really good big slot right away, and I still think he could be a pretty good player in that regard. But it's just he's still got a long way to go in terms of winning against press man coverage on the outside. And he's a very, very, very raw route runner for sure. So he can take that step, but I also just kind of think his ceiling is a little overstated, but there's no doubt he's going to moonwalk into 110, 120 targets this year for sure, even in a run heavy offense.
Okay. All right. Fair.
All right. Last one here, the game that's going to decide who gets Caleb Williams. I've got two. Obviously, the second game between the Rams and the Cardinals, week 11, Rams at Cardinals. They avoided putting this one too deep into the season. They don't want a tank. They don't want a tank game, the NFL, in week 17 or something like that. They don't want that. But week 17, we've got Bucks versus Saints. I think the Saints are going to be pretty good this year. You know, I think it's either going to be them or the Falcons win that division, although the Panthers could surprise you. But really, it's about the Bucks, man. Like, what are the Bucks going to look like by week 17? Did they ship off Mike Evans at the trade deadline? Are they playing Kyle Trask or, you know, even their third string quarterback at that point? And, you know, the Saints could just beat up on the Bucks in that spot, right? Like, what does that team look like in week 17? I think is going to go a long way to deciding who gets Caleb Williams, because who's obviously Caleb Williams, USC quarterback, the presumptive number one overall pick next year. I think those are the two games you got to look at for the Caleb Williams sweepstakes.
Yeah, of course, we're all guessing, but I'm pretty convinced that Caleb Williams is going to be the next superstar and awesome and franchise quarterback. And I don't want him in the NFC West, so I prefer not the Rams or the Cardinals, but it really does appear like the Cardinals may, you know, the new regime may move on from Kyler Murray, and Houston's the other team, you know, favored to get the first pick next year. They're obviously set at quarterback now. So yeah, Arizona and the Rams, big threats there. I hope the Bucks totally have a poor season and they finish number one and get them out of the NFC West. Cause yeah, I know that Drake May is considered a real deal as well, but Caleb Williams, I'm just convinced that he's going to be a superstar. So for selfish reasons, I'd put him out, not in Arizona or the Rams. Man, get him. with McVay. That could be sick staying in LA.
Yeah, that would be awesome. As long as he goes to the NFC somewhere, man, because the NFC needs like some more young, promising quarterbacks. They're all in the AFC at this point. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But, oh, wait, one last thing on the Caleb Williams thing. I also think that, you know, if the Bears are not good again, what if the Bears are picking number one overall second year in a row? Justin Fields doesn't take that next step.
Oh, like, sorry,
Andy Behrens, Jason Klobaka, you know, our fearless leader, cover your ears. But, you know, if the Bears stink again, they could be a Caleb Williams team for sure. They're like a dark horse that I keep thinking about in terms of who could really bottom out, even though they were just picking number one overall this year, theoretically.
Yeah, I love Fields fantasy this year. He's going too late. Did a magazine mock. He went in like the fifth round. He's too late. But in real life, questions remain big time.
All right, one last schedule take for the road. Let's talk about some revenge games, baby. We got some good revenge games this year, man. All right, first, we start with Tyreek Hill versus the Chiefs, week 9. Unfortunately, not in Kansas City. It's in Germany. We just talked about Justin Fields. His new number one receiver, DJ Moore, is going to face the Panthers in week 10. That's a banger of a revenge game, baby. We got Darren Waller, just got shipped off unceremoniously by Josh McDaniels and the Las Vegas Raiders. He's going to see him in week 9. Got a chance for big time revenge. Calvin Ridley, you know, he was traded by the Atlanta Falcons. He's going to see them in week 4. That's a pretty big banger of a revenge game. I'm sure, even though obviously he, you know, he stepped away from the team, the gambling suspension, we get it. I'm sure he still has some motivation to get over on his old team. Odell Beckham's going to see his old mates with the Cleveland Browns in week 4 and week 10 because the Ravens play in his division. Let's hope he's healthy by week 10 to still play. Also, a lot less bad blood between Kevin Stefanski and Odell Beckham. It was mostly Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham that had the bad blood, but still, that's a revenge game. Jacoby Myers goes back to his old team, faces the Patriots in week 4 or week 6. Adam Thielen, he's the week 4 revenge game against his old team, the Minnesota Vikings. Old man Thielen got himself paid, but he's still going to want to get over on the Vikings. Davante Adams gets the Packers in week 5. I guarantee you Davante Adams wants to drop a hammer on the Packers. Maybe not, you know, Steve Smith blood and guts level when he played the Panthers with the Ravens. If you remember that, Dalton, you know, when he was like, oh yeah, there's gonna be blood and guts on the field. I don't know if Adams has that much bad blood in him, but there's certainly some motivation there. And last but of course not least, Baker Mayfield versus the Panthers, week 13. Is Baker Mayfield gonna be still starting by the Bucks at that point? Probably not. So those are the best revenge games I think on the schedule this year from an offensive player standpoint. We've got some big ones there. There's a ton of interesting ones. And look, if you're a revenge game hater, relax. We're not saying these guys are definitely going to exceed projections just because they're playing their old team. It's just for fun. Relax. It's just a bit. But Dalton, who sticks out on this list of revenge games here as particularly interesting?
First off, Steve Smith, one of my favorite players of all time. Of course, I remember that. This is so, so awesome. Do you see the new footage of him saying he called Cooper Kupp like the best receiver in that class?
Yeah.
So yeah, and I guess he's big on Jonathan Mingo. So love Steve Smith. Listen to him. Yeah, at first I was like, there's not too many spicy revenge games here, but there are actually. The Tyreek Hill. It's too bad that it isn't. That one is out of the country, but a nice one there against the Chiefs. But Davante Adams and Packers is the one that stands out to me. You know, we're just, you know. Without Aaron Rodgers doesn't make it quite the same, but that's probably the one. I don't know, Ridley and the Falcons. I mean, it's too bad that they had that separation, but so pretty decent ones. But I'm more of the guy who's like, I don't know, the revenge game. I'm kind of rolling my eyes here, to be honest.
Well, I get it. I totally understand. The DJ Moore one versus the Panthers.
But I'll write about it still in my DFS and make a joke every week, to be clear. And every single one of these, I'm going to call it a revenge game and treat it like it's going to matter. But in reality, you know, maybe you get an extra target here or there. Maybe OBJ or something. We'll talk into his offensive coordinator. But, you know, for most of this stuff, as you said, this is just silliness.
It's totally silliness, which is why it's our last note on the podcast. But, yeah, DJ Moore versus the Panthers. Obviously, I'm interested in that. It's crazy, like, they were so heartbroken to give up DJ Moore. His agent said they called him in tears when they had to inform him part of the number one overall pick trade. That like Ryan Poles was just, he was hammering him on that point. Like, nope, I don't want another first rounder. You need to give me DJ Moore. This number one overall pick trade is not happening. So I don't know that there's necessarily going to be bad blood between DJ Moore and the Panthers, but that's an interesting homecoming, or, you know, at least meeting up with his old team type of thing. So I don't know. These are obviously always interesting for storylines, but as you mentioned, Dalton, they're not like the end all be all. Don't make your lineup decision. Do I start OBJ in the flex or somebody else? Christian Kirk? Well, OBJ's playing the Browns. He wasn't. Apparently him and Kevin Stefanski are super tight. Like at the owner's meeting when Beckham was there trying to get a job, he was like, oh, you know, O's here. Like, oh yeah. Like dapping him up and stuff. So yeah. This stuff can be silly for sure.
And we're really stretching the Jacoby Myers versus Patriots too. We're really getting deep there. We're getting that depth there. But yeah, but
good I don't times, know, man. Dude, they gave Juju basically the same contract and said, see you later.
Yeah.
We don't.
That's true. So, yeah.
They did choose him over.
That seems like an egregious, right?
Yeah. That was, I don't particularly like that move. So yeah, no. You know what? Actually, we're talking week six versus Patriots. We're ranking Jacoby Myers top 10. We just decided.
Yeah, I take it back. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's my favorite one.
All right. Dalton, appreciate you, man. This was awesome. We stretched a scheduled discussion for like an hour, which is pretty impressive work here in May. But I'm going to let you go. Good luck to your Warriors. You can return to the NBA and all these other sports that don't matter.
Thanks, man. Good times.
Appreciate you, Dalton. All right, that's going to do it for us. Next Tuesday, we have the author of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, Matt Waldman, and we're going to talk about... What else? We're going to talk about the best fits, best landing spot for all the rookies. Until then, we're out.